It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 391 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week we delve into a great steampunk comic called Heirs of Isildur by talking with the creators Matt Knowles and Steph Cannon, who is his editor. There's a Kickstarter going on, and it concludes on Sunday, August 18, so I'm sure you're going to want to go out and support it after you listen to this episode. We talk about how the book came to be, who the main characters are, and what we might expect from them in the coming months, and there's a lot of good things coming. It was fun to talk with Matt and Steph because they have a lot of interesting things to say about creating comics, as well as the music that accompanies the books, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they have to say. One word of warning, while I was talking with them, I went to their website and I didn't realize that their music would start up right away. So at one point during the interview, you'll hear the site's music come up very briefly. Don't let that distract you though, because it is a great fun interview. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Great to be talking with the creators of Heirs of Isildur, which is a steampunk book that is right now on Kickstarter and doing very well as we're recording. Let's talk with Matt Knowles. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, how you doing there, Wayne? Thanks a lot for having us on.
It's good to talk with you. And Steph Cannon, how are you, Steph?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Well, Matt, why don't you explain what Heirs of Isildur is?
All right, so Heirs of Isildur is a steampunk time travel story. We like to say it's time travel in reverse because it's not about getting into the time machine and going to the past to try and change some event to affect the future. It's about a conservative little steampunk enclave and their watch and clockmaker named Michael Isildur, who one day unintentionally opens a time portal that starts bringing people from other eras, times, dimensions to him. And so he ends up becoming responsible for these individuals. And the whole crux of the story is this guy that's all about making sure time works exactly as it should could be the person who ultimately breaks the timeline.
Hmm. Okay. And Steph, what's your involvement with it?
My official title is editor and story consultant. I came into the series. Matt had created the series before we ever even met. And we met as creators and became friends, and, you know, I was a fan of Heirs and had read up to, I think, about the third issue about that point when we kind of decided we wanted my role to kind of be involved in it a little bit more. So I'm officially editor, story consultant, you know, everything from copy editing to going over the story and, you know, making sure that, you know, everything flows correctly and that there's, you know, the plot is where it should be and, you know, the typical editor roles. But we have also, you know, Heirs also has a music side of it as well, and we've done some music videos for that, and I've been creative consultant on the direction of the music videos have gone as well.
Okay. So, Matt, apparently you're the creator of all this. You're the one who generated all these things to start, and it's grown out since then. Where did the idea come from?
So that's a good question. So the idea for Heirs actually started kind of organically with this steampunk aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I was a musician for a long time and, you know, just toiled in the underground, you know, had a band that released, like, I think, 5 CDs, but it was all underground stuff, you know, really didn't make much of a dent in the industry overall. I got really burnt out on the industry and just burnt out on creating altogether. And I just stepped away from it completely. After 7 or 8 years, there were, you know, my family members and some friends of mine that kept on, you know, hey, really want to see you get back into stuff. And you know, I had that urge in the back of my head that I really wanted to, you know, start writing again. I just wanted to do it a different way. And when I started doing airs, what I did was there were some old song lyrics and concepts and things that I kind of had, you know, filed away in the old file cabinet, so to speak. And I started taking some of those out and rewriting them and repurposing them. And just in that, it made me feel like my life was almost like a steampunk allegory, because what is steampunk? It's when you take things that look old, but then you make them into something that's new and futuristic. And so with my life kind of revolving around that kind of aspect, I felt like having the steampunk aesthetic to what we were doing, it just kind of made sense.
Now, I see you often, like, at cons and stuff like that, dressed up as the main character, I think it is. That is who you're portraying, right?
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, because I saw that when I was reading the book, I kept thinking about you. I've seen you at several conventions where you've been dressed up in steampunk. Do you get to go to cons, too, as well, Steph?
Oh, yeah. Really, the majority of the cons that I'm attending, Matt and I are attending together. Mm. It was right about the time that I started getting involved in airs. Shortly thereafter, Matt asked me to fly out, and, you know, if I would fly out and be a part of a steampunk show that was happening. And I said, absolutely, I'd love to represent the brand. And got myself some steampunk clothes. And, you know, a month and a half later, I was out there. But we try to do as many shows as we can. I'm in California right now, and he's in Florida, so that presents a little bit of a challenge, but it's a temporary one. And but yeah, any show that I can make with him, I'm there.
Okay, so Matt plays Michael, the main character. Do you portray yourself as the female that I've seen in some of the early issues?
I will say not yet, okay. But there are definite plans in the pipeline for that. Right now, it's just the general steampunk aesthetic. I never really did cosplay or dressed in steampunk before this, so still kind of trying to find my look that I'm comfortable with and that I like. I mean, I enjoy all of it, because who doesn't like to go to cons and dress up in the world that they have created? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's definitely something that I would love to do.
Now, Matt, I'm just kind of curious. You talked a little bit about what steampunk is, but let's say somebody's never heard of it or seen it before. How would you describe it?
I would say that steampunk, a lot of times you see you're going to have goggles and gears and brown. The way that I like to explain it is, if you think back to, say, the 1950s, and you would see what people thought the future was going to be like. And it was, you know, traffic lanes of flying Etzels in the sky and the technology of the 1950s and what they think it would be once you cross the year 2000. Steampunk, to me, is if you take that same kind of thought process and you take it back to, like, the 1890s. And you take it back to Victorian times right before the turn of the century, and you say, what would happen if the future was determined based on the technology that was around back then? So maybe a steam-powered computer, or you know, a watch that, you know, just some of the mechanics of that watch are just things that would be rudimentary to what we would say nowadays, but they would have lots of gears and cogs and things like that would make them actually operate and do the things that we take for granted today.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see, I'm looking at the website where the Kickstarter is, and I guess maybe we should, one thing we better do maybe is spell the name so people know how to find it. Steph, can you do that?
Yeah, it's sure. It's Heirs of a Seal Door, so it's Heirs, H-E-I-R-S, of, and then Seal Door is I-S-I-L-D-U-R, and if you type that into Kickstarter, it should come right up, but the official name of our campaign is Heirs of a Seal Door, 1-11 issue and trade.
Okay. And that should get people there to take a look at it. It's interesting stuff. Now, I was talking with you, Matt, before we started to record about the fact that you're making some changes to the existing books that you have. Talk a little bit about that, would you, and why you're making changes.
Sure. So this storyline has been evolving for a couple of years. I wrote it and the musical album probably a couple of years ago, like in concept. And when I first started, I was writing it as an ebook, and then that ebook kind of turned into an illustrated novel. And at the time, that's what I thought I wanted. As time moved on and I got a little more experienced in what I was doing and the team changed, we added Javi LaParra as the artist, and with Steph coming on, it morphed into being more of a comic. Yes, it's still going to be wordy and there's still going to be a lot of narrative in there, but it definitely more resembles a comic now than any kind of book. And we kind of looked back and we had to do a reprint of issues 1 and 2. And we made the decision, like, look, don't really want to reprint the original versions because they were truly illustrated novels. It was mostly text with a couple of pictures that supported the text. Then I'm like, I don't want to be going to shows and telling people, hey, here's our issue number 1, but you really want to look at issue number 6 or number 7 because that's when it really started to become a comic. So we, right off the bat, went back and fixed up issues 1 and 2. And now we're going back through the entire series from 1 through 10, even the ones that you guys have already read, 1 through 10. And we are touching up the lettering all the way through. That way, the lettering is going to be consistent all the way throughout. We are making sure that there's actually word bubbles all the way back to the very beginning that attach to characters, so that way, you know, like I said, it's a consistent feel. We don't want people to be feeling like they're reading one type of story and then get to the next issue and be like, whoa, hold on for a second. I just went from reading a book to now I'm reading a comic. What happened? Now the only differences really are going to be the fact that there, you've got a couple different artists that portrayed some of the characters throughout the issues.
Now, why don't you talk about the change of artists? Now, Steph, do you want to talk about that, or is that something Matt should deal with? You had an artist change somewhere through.
I think at this point, either one of us could, but we actually have two different, I mean, we could actually add two different things to it because it's kind of an interesting story. Javi is the current artist. He's been with us since issue 6. And Javi was an artist that I had worked with on a one-page comic called Boot Hill. And that's actually that was the impetus for Matt and I to meet. Matt happened to see the one-page comic that I did with Javi and complimented me on it. And, you know, from there we became friends and then business partners. Matt had been working with an artist named Blake Wilkie before that. And, you know, I can let Matt kind of, you know, take it from there. But Javi was who, you know, Matt knew of through me. And so, you know, Javi and I had already had a partnership that we had worked on beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, Blake was the person who helped me get off the ground when it came to doing Airs. And there just came a point where what I wanted to do and what his time schedule was just became incompatible. I mean, hey, that's what happens sometimes where, mm-hmm. you know, it grows one way, you know, each person grows and they just kind of, you know, grow in different directions and need different things. And Javi had already started to work with us before that artist change had happened because we did the animated lyric video for the song Love, Learn, and Betrayal. And Steph had agreed that we could ask Javi to do that because I'm the kind of person that believes if you know somebody that is working with an artist and they're a friend of yours, that you just don't go and ask that artist to go and work on a project of yours as well, because that artist only has a finite amount of time. And it's just a respect thing to make sure that you clarify that the person that you know, so that way you're not, you know, trying to build your project and then harm theirs in the process. To me, I just don't play that kind of game. And when I talked to Steph, she was all on board. She said, absolutely, Javi's probably going to be the right guy to do the video. We had him come in and do the video and he knocked it out of the park. And once the video was done, then it organically had the same situation where we knew that we needed to make the shift in the artists. And once again, we're like, well, hey, now Javi was the artist on the video. What do you think about him becoming the artist full time on the series? And she was all for it. And we asked him and here we sit today.
Okay, which is pretty good. When I was reading the books, you could tell there's a different artist, but the feel is still the same, which is the good thing about it. So I think it was a good choice if you have to make a change to make the change that you did, because I think it's very consistent.
Well, I really, really appreciate you saying that, because that's one of the biggest things for us, is that we want to make sure that there's a consistency to what we're doing. I mean, obviously, no two people are going to draw the same, mm-hmm. but everything we can do to try and make sure that that when people are reading the story, they feel like they're reading one story regardless of the artist that's there. That's exactly what we want to do.
Very cool. Now, when did you start working on this? I mean, how long has it taken to get to this point?
So I can tell you that the impetus for me to start actually getting off my butt and truly getting back into doing content creation of any kind happened in December of 2015. I had a very key event that happened in December of 15 that made me say, yep, it's time for me to get off the schneid and make it happen. Mm-hmm. So January of 16, and I had already been writing some music at that time. I'd already been writing some lyrics, but it wasn't like actively pursuing to make something happen. But that impetus in December of 15 actually made me get off my butt and do something. And Blake came into the fold. Like, I had worked on it for a full year before Blake came into the fold in January of 17. I had been recording the music. The first song for the album got released in 2017. That was the character origin story song for the character Shiver. Mm-hmm. That lyric video was released in March of 17. The first issue was September of 17, and then the album was December of 17. So you can see it's taken a long time to get to the point where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. I mean, you've made a lot of progress. Whenever you do these kinds of things, it takes its time, especially because you can't do this full time. You've got to make a living besides to support this stuff. So it's interesting that you've gone into the Kickstarter now. Is this your first Kickstarter, you guys?
This is our second Kickstarter, actually. We successfully funded the spinoff series to Heirs, which was entitled Tales from Nocturnia. That was in April. And we actually, it's kind of crazy. I feel like I just got back to California, even though it's been 3-4 weeks now. But I was actually in Florida helping to ship out and fulfill and sign issues and send the issues for Nocturnia. So yeah, this is our second one. And, you know, we had a lot of success and learned a lot from the first one. Mm-hmm.
I mean, does that help you? I mean, Matt, as far as like getting things done, I mean, you know, everybody thinks that these days it seems to be effortless to make a comic because everybody, you can do it. You can work with the, I mean, sometimes you work with artists that are overseas and stuff like that when you're doing stuff. And it just seems to come together, but it's a very involved process, as Matt, I'm sure you can attest to.
It's an incredibly involved process. I can tell you the video we were just talking about, Love, Lore, and Betrayal, was a legitimate international experience because we had me in Florida, Steph in California, Javi in Guatemala, and then our video guy, Julian, is in Brazil. So you had four people on different coasts and different, you know, continents or parts of continents putting this thing together. But yeah, there's a lot of, I would say there's certain parts of putting a comic together that are easy, mm-hmm. but there's also certain parts that are incredibly complicated because one of the things that I think is one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they're like, hey, I want to see what I can do to put a single comic together. And I want to put all the bells and whistles in it. I want to make this thing work. I want to do what I can. And then that one's done. And they're like, oh, crap, now I want to make another one. There is absolutely no possible way I can have the same kind of budget. I can have the same kind of time expense to make this number two. How do I do it? With Heirs, I had the entire thing scripted out, the entire budget set aside before I even started it, because with Heirs being 11 issues, and side note, we are never going to do another 11 issue arc because that's just too many. Mm-hmm. But I already had all the money for the album, the arcs, you know, whether it was printing, whether it was the artists saved up beforehand, because I wanted to make sure that if someone like Wayne Hall decided he wanted to go invest his hard-earned money mm-hmm. into the series, that he knew that he's going to be able to get the entire series, that it wasn't going to be, hey, we got two issues into this 7-issue arc and then it died.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get to the characters and the situation and stuff a little more, but I do one more thing I want to ask about the Kickstarter. It gives you issue 11 of 11 and a trade paperback. So obviously you're going to make the individual issues available, but also a collected edition. Now, Steph, maybe you can talk about that and the difference between the two and what's going to take to make all these things happen.
We decided fairly early on that we wanted to do a trade that was going to collect all we knew. Matt had it planned out that it was going to be an 11-issue story arc. Mm-hmm. We knew that we were going to do a trade, and we knew that we didn't want to offer just the trade or just issue 11. We wanted to give fans or new fans to the series the opportunity to do either one. If you've collected all the individual issues and you just want issue 11, you can do that. If you are a collector and you want to get all of the individual issues and the trade, you can definitely do that too. Although we will say that even if you have all the issues, there are things that we're offering in the trade that are going to make it worth somebody's while to want to invest in that as well, because it's an enhanced trade. There are extras in it. There's facts that Matt has put in there. There's lyrics to the songs. So there's stuff in there that even if you have all 11 issues individually, you're still going to kind of want that trade. So yeah, people can go in, they can get the full trade, they can get issue 11 on its own, they can get all the issues, and then of course we have extras like Lone the Dark Jacket patches and trading cards and that kind of thing.
Now I see there's 260 pages in so that's a pretty good sized book.
Yeah, it's pretty hefty. That's also part of the reason why, you know, we're going back and doing the relettering. I mean, one, because we know it's going to flow better this way, and we're really happy with the way it's coming out. But two, when you're talking about a book that's that big, you know, there's no reason for it to be told in 308 pages if it can be told in 260 pages. Mm-hmm. So we're making sure that the length of the book is the right length, not too big, not too small, just right. But yeah, 260 pages is going to be is a long issue, but it is what it is when you got 11 issues of the campaign to do it. I mean, 11 issues of the series to put in the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing I want to do, the time when this is actually taking place, because there are people from different time periods. And I was just curious if you could say, when does this actually happen? I mean, we get people from different places, but what's Michael's home? I mean, it's a town of, let's see, Shadows Haven. Yes, that's right. And when is this happening? Is there a year that you have in mind for this?
So I love when people ask this question, because one of the things that we pride ourselves on in AIRS is we like to say that it is timeline agnostic. Yeah. It is basically, you know, somewhere in the late 1800s to early 1900s, mm-hmm. but it's not really in any of them, because mm-hmm. there's a little bit too much technology for it to be Victorian era, mm-hmm. but there's also certain things that make it seem like it is Victorian era as well. So, you know, one of the things about the story is without telling a spoiler is, you don't really know if these characters are coming from the past or the present or parallel timelines, multiverse, any of that. Mm-hmm. And we kind of like it that way, mm-hmm. because to us, the story is more about the characters and how they are interacting and evolving themselves in this scenario, in this timeline that they've been put in. So we don't really know. I mean, who knows? Maybe the character Merc, maybe her timeline is the one that is exactly like the one that you and I live in right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe Michael's is some offshoot to where in the 1890s, he had a little bit of technology that was more than what you could get nowadays. And so that's kind of the fun of it, is you don't really know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's start off. Let's talk about Michael. He's the one that the whole thing revolves around. Talk about who Michael is. He's a watchmaker, a watch repair person in this. And he comes to get another nickname. I think it was Timekeeper. That's right. So talk about him. I mean, is he based on you as a person? Is he a creation of yours? How does that work?
So Michael is, but absolutely is not me. And what I mean by that is, people look at the art, and especially I would say about issue 8, there's some stuff that you're like, whoa, this looks like self-portraits of me. But it's not meant to be where it's just me putting myself into the story. I cosplayed the character. I sent the picture to the artist, and I said, this is what I want the character to look like. It came out looking really good. So I'm like, well, this is going to make it super easy to be able to cosplay at a show, because it was designed on my outfit. One of the things about Michael that is absolutely not like me is I am not a cogs and gears and grease and oil kind of person. I can't stand, you know, that kind of stuff. My wife changes if I have a flat tire, my wife changes the flat on the car. I'm just not down with that stuff. This is not me. But one thing I am is a very creative person. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a lot of Legos in my house. I let my problem solver. So in that respect, Michael is like me, because he's always looking for ways to be able to be creative. You talked about Michael being a clock and watch repairman. Mm-hmm. In the story, he has spent his entire life trying to make sure that time works exactly as it should. That is his life's mission. If somebody comes in with a clock or watch that's malfunctioning, he wants to make sure that clock or watch is working better than it was when it came into the store, maybe even better than it was when it was first manufactured. And that's just what he's always lived his life towards. Mm-hmm. He lives in a town of Shadowshaven that is very regimented, and everything works to the number, meaning that if somebody is going to work and they got to be there at 4 o'clock, they're going to be there right at 4 o'clock on the dot. If somebody knows that they're going to be walking on this specific sidewalk at this time, that's who's going to be there. If somebody else is trying to walk in their spot at that time, there could be problems. So that is, you know, not only in his life, but in the life around him in Shadowshaven, everything is regimented. You know, but that doesn't mean that Michael's not a curious person. He's a curious person. There's part of him that's like, hey, you know what? I love doing this, but I feel like there needs to be more to my life than what I'm doing right now. I feel like if I die right now, I'm going to have a forgettable legacy. And when he happens upon this time portal early in issue 1, he doesn't intentionally go looking for it. But when it happens, that is the catalyst to, hey, man, it looks like this thing to, you know, give me a legacy may have just happened, whether I like it or not.
Mm-hmm. The name on the store says readjusting the gears of reality. Yes. Which is something to do with the whole story and things like that. He's a very interesting character. He wants to be more than what he is, he thinks. And that's kind of a thing that's everybody kind of, gosh, we all kind of feel like we're living ordinary lives and we could only do something a little more, then it might make a difference.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts about issue one, and I've told Steph, and we've talked about it many times, I would retell issue one, chapter one, in any medium, in any format that somebody wants it to be done, whether it's a video game, whether it's a movie, whether it's something animated, because the majority of that chapter is simply about Michael. And it was written in a way that any person in any walk of life can read that chapter and go, holy crap, I could understand what this guy's feeling right now, where you just kind of live in your life, and then all of a sudden something grand and wild starts to happen to you. And I wanted people to be able to say, hey, I can see myself in that character. I mean, obviously it may not be a time portal that's going to open up, but I really do want to have something wild and something adventurous happen to me, just like happened to this guy.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. And I don't want to give away any parts of the story, but let's just say they come across something that allows them to draw people into where Michael is. And the first one they come across is a guy by the name of Shiver. And Steph, why don't you talk about who Shiver is?
I actually would love to talk about Shiver, because Shiver is one of my favorite characters of the entire story. So Shiver comes through the portal to Michael. And I want to keep it a little vague because I don't want to give too many spoilers, but Shiver comes from a very different world and surrounding. I mean, he literally is on death's door when he first comes to Michael. Michael literally kind of brings him back to life in a way. And Shiver, it's very clear right away that, you know, we're not sure, but we know that Shiver's from a different, not only maybe a different time, but a very, very different surrounding. And Shiver has been alone for a very long time. So even any kind of human interaction at all is almost foreign to him. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of him kind of readjusting, so to speak, to being with other human beings again, being in a setting where there's vehicles and, you know, modern, somewhat modern. And I say modern, but of course, you know, we've talked about its timeline agnostic, but modern technology to him. But Shiver, it's very clear right from the get-go, Shiver is a very loyal, very trusting, very astute character, and he very quickly bonds with Michael in a way. They form this friendship under these wild circumstances. And one of my favorite things about Shiver is just that he trusts Michael completely, without question, pretty much right from the start.
Mm-hmm. I have suspicions about him and his relationship to Michael, shall we say. Just want to get to that. I don't want to spoil any of that, but I have suspicions about that. But anyway, the next character that appears is a girl, and we've talked a little bit about her, named Merc. And Matt, why don't you talk about Merc?
So Merc has got a really interesting backstory, and this actually plays back into the musical side of what Ayers is. A lot of the lyrics for the Ayers of a Sealed Door album come from either real life experiences or things that happen to people close to me. And Merc, when right before she meets Michael and Shiver, was nearly suicidal. She was very close to committing suicide. She was in a despondent point in her life. And the activity that happened between Michael and Shiver and Merc was the thing that saved her life. I had a very similar situation happen in my life where a friend of mine posted something very peculiar on Facebook that was it was disturbing to the point that I reached out and was like, you know, are you okay? What's going on? And they told me what was going on in their life. And I completely understood why they were despondent, because what had happened was pretty messed up, and kind of kept tabs on her for quite a while. And, you know, and it was about 4 months later, and we had just a, you know, post-mortem discussion about, you know, where she was at that time. And she said to me, you know, well, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here today. And I said, well, you know, I'm glad I could help. And she's like, no, you don't understand. I was going to kill myself that night. I was going to hang myself in the garage. I already knew what was going to happen. And when you reached out to me, that, you know, kind of knocked me back into reality. And I decided that wasn't the right thing to do. So from that, the song Murky Waters on the album came about. And I had the thought, I was like, you know, these things are really cool. How can I turn some of these songs into backstories for the character? So it doesn't mean that Merc's whole backstory is everything that happened in real life in the song Murky Waters, but it at least is the essence of where her backstory is, and to find a way to be able to write it into this, write it into the story was actually a really fun thing. So if somebody wants to know more about Merc, they can go listen to Murky Waters. If somebody wants to know more about Shiver, they can go listen to the song Shiver and get a little more insight into what was going on with them before they ended up meeting Michael Isildur.
Now, what's interesting, too, is the fact that when they get to be near where Michael is, they don't remember their name.
Yes.
Which I found interesting. And then basically, Michael seems to be the one doing the naming. He hears or sees something that makes him shiver. Was shivering when he first sees him, I think, and that's why he's called Shiver. And Merc has, there's murky something going on, and then he takes on the name Merc for her.
Yeah. She said she felt like her head was sinking below murky waters when she was, you know, in that suicidal state. She's like, I felt like my head was under murky waters and I couldn't come back to the surface. And then the Timekeeper, the nickname that Michael has, is the one that Shiver gave him. Because even though Michael is here in his time period and he knows his name, Shiver was like, hey, if you're going to call me by something else and I don't have a name that I can remember, you know, I think you're more the Timekeeper than anything else. So I'm going to start calling you the Timekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody has their own little nicknames.
And there's an interesting contrast between Shiver and Merc, because Shiver is less technologically advanced. And Merc, who understands cell phones and things like that, is much more technologically advanced. So yes, they're two ends of the spectrum kind of going on there, which I found that interesting to see, because they see things differently. So Shiver is constantly trying to figure out what's going on. Merc often more than understands, especially when technology is involved, because she's familiar with future technology, really seems like. Now, there's other characters.
Absolutely.
I don't know if we should get into the other characters, because things develop, and I don't want to spoil too much. These are the three that everything seems to go around. There is one thing aspect I thought was kind of interesting. I did want to touch on it. Was Merc's relationship to Michael, because she's a woman of the future, and she's not going to wait for anybody to express interest in her. She's going to make the first move, which she does with Michael, which was really interesting because his reaction is funny. It's you know, he's not used to a woman who comes on and basically says, you know, hey, I'm interested in you, and he's kind of, you know, his face gets red and he's embarrassed and other things like that. It's kind of a funny thing to see. Of course, that doesn't, you know, she continues to go on and she's always saying complimentary things, and you know, and she's on his side and all that good stuff, which I really like. So their relationship is a fun thing to read.
Well, I appreciate that, and I definitely glad that you're picking up on a lot of these things that are little subtle touches that are in there. And yeah, you know, that's right. She's from the future. She knows she almost lost her life, and she's not afraid to talk about her feelings. We learn a little later on in the series, and again, no spoilers, why Michael is the way that he is and why Michael is as closed off as he is, and maybe some regret about some of the things that he's been closed off about. And the gist that we try to get across in the story is, even though Michael has helped save them, is it really Michael who saved them, or are they helping to save him as well?
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into it, but there's several other things that happen in there that go along that are really interesting, different characters and different things that go along. But I think you should read the book rather than us, you know, reveal them before you get to the book, because that's half the fun that I had, was being able to, as we kept going into meeting new people, I enjoyed the fact that I got to discover them, and I don't want to take away stuff from that. So as we've got issues 11 of 11 is going to be out in the trade. Do you have any idea when that's going to be done?
So issue 11 is actually done. We finished issue 11 the day before we launched the Kickstarter. The last panel of art came in Monday night. And the panels are done, the pages are done, the lettering's done. The only thing that's left is we have to go back through some editorial review, and I throw my eyes towards Steph on that one. And then, you know, little things that would happen from the Kickstarter, like if somebody wants to have their name in the thank yous, that kind of stuff. But our goal is to have it, when the Kickstarter campaign ends, we're able to go straight to print on the issue and the trade paperback and getting the trading cards printed up and all that stuff. We definitely don't want people to have to wait. So yeah, issue 11's done. And I can tell you that I would think that when you saw the issues, you could say, oh, yeah, I can kind of see what's going on here through about issue 6. And then stuff kind of went off the rails a little bit in 7. You're like, well, this is a little wild. And then you got to like issue 9 and you're like, what the heck is going on here? And then 10 got a little bit crazy. Issue 11 makes a lot of the stuff that happened in like 7, 9, and 10 seem like child's play in a sense. I mean, it really goes off the rails, but it's all intentional. It's not just going off the rails just for the sake of doing it. I mean, there's definitely planned things out there. There's things planned for the sequel. I like to say that I like to write in reverse, meaning that there are some things you're going to be like, well, how are these guys ever going to get out of this fine mess they found themselves in? Mm-hmm. Those things are already written out because I want people to trust that there's a point to some of these crazy things that are happening.
You can always tell when somebody knows where they're going. Some people write like they get in the car and they don't have any place to go. They just meander around and it's not very satisfying. But you can tell when somebody knows, like when you're story, you know that we're going somewhere. And that's the important thing. It was like, I always felt like Marv Wolfman and the New Teen Titans was that way. I knew we were going someplace. I wasn't sure where it was, but I could just feel the hand on the steering wheel was going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. Right. I feel that with yours, too. I know you're heading somewhere, and it's going to be fun to get there.
Well, one of the things, too, that I will say that we do that is very unique with Heirs, because this is one of three titles that we have. We have Tales from Nocturnia, which is the medieval spinoff from Heirs. And then we also have a title, The Accursed, that's going to be on Alterna Comics come February 2020. Mm-hmm. And The Accursed and Tales from Nocturnia, Steph and I are both co-writing. So we know the whole arc. We know exactly where we're going. We both have different roles with those titles, but everything is out there in the consciousness as we're doing it. With Heirs is completely different. With Heirs, nobody knows what's going on until it's time for me to reveal it, even the people on the creative team, partially because Steph started off as a fan. Her reaction as a fan is what endeared me to her, because she did very similar to what you're doing on this call right now, Wayne. You could tell she paid attention. She had thoughts and she had ideas and philosophies about the characters, and she really took it to a level that nobody had taken it to previously. That's why, you know, I was like, man, this person, I really want this person to be part of the team because she understands where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. But we never want to lose the fact that Steph was a fan first. Mm-hmm. So when it's time to get to the next issue, we'll be on video chat and I will read her the issue so that she has the ability to react like a fan. Mm-hmm. She has the ability to experience it just like everybody else will when they get the issue. So I can tell you one of the best things was when we got to the end of issue 11, mm-hmm. she was like, you got to write the sequel right now. I got to know what happened. Yeah. She's like, you can't make people wait. I'm like, don't you worry. I've got pages and pages and pages of notes where we're going to be going, and don't you worry, fan, you know, now it's time to have fan stuff. We're good. Now we got to go put editor hat on and make this thing the best it can be.
Mm-hmm. And I will say too, that I had a lot of theories and a lot of guesses, and I think I was wrong on all of them, but that I think is the highest compliment that you can give, because you don't want to be predictable. And no. I can definitely say that this is not a predictable story. I think it's great that I had guesses that were fun for Matt to hear and fun for me to guess, but that were, some of them were close a little bit, but yeah, it was wrong. And I love it. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Boy, this feels like it could be a TV show to me. This could be on Sci-Fi or something like that, because it has well-developed characters, lots of things, interesting things going on. I could really see this be somewhere.
I think Wayne Hall needs to be our agent, man. Let's make it happen. Let's do it.
We definitely would love that.
I wish I could. I wish I knew people that could make that happen. I can tell when something should be on there, but it's making it happen. That's probably a little out of my purview, but it's really a good thing. Now, the important news is that we've got until Sunday, August the 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. To that, the goal is $3,700, and as we're recording, you're about two-thirds of the way there, which is a great way to start. So 54 backers at this time. You know, if you look at the page when this comes out, there should be more, and things will go along well. But you know, have you got stretch goals in mind? Because I have a good feeling you're going to get to this goal before the August 18 deadline.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Some good stretch goals in mind. And one of the things we've learned, you know, from Kickstarter 1 to Kickstarter 2, and from some of the people that have been like our mentors when it comes to Kickstarter, is you don't set that limit of your pledge as the number you need to get to be able to make the issue happen. You set that number as something you can get to close into the beginning of the campaign. That way you can have fun in the second half of the campaign. Mm-hmm. I mean, we definitely need more than $3,700 to do the things we want to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we definitely have some things that are going to make it worth the while of the individuals that are supporting or watching to hopefully entice them to want to do more or to press that button and actually pledge.
Cool. Well, I think you're going to get there pretty quickly. At least I hope so, because I'd like to see more. I'm like Steph, I want to see more. What's going on? I think it's a good thing. The Kickstarter, we've spelled out how to get there. There's one other thing I wanted to mention. There's a catch line. It says, we're steampunk comics and metal collide. I find that's an interesting way to do it. Now, you can buy the soundtrack, right? Why don't we talk a little bit about that? Because as you go through the books, there are certain places where they indicate, if you want to learn more about this character, listen to this song. So how would people get a hold of the music if they want to?
Yeah, the CD, well, we are offering the CD and the MP3 on the Kickstarter. We do have a website, heirsoftheseeldor.com, and you can get all of our merchandise there. So the CD is also available on there. And it's a 12-track CD. And you know, like we've talked about before, you don't necessarily need the music to read the comic. You don't necessarily need to read the comic to enjoy the music. But both of them together are a very nice pairing, like a fine wine and meat together. Mm-hmm. But it gives you just a little bit more insight to some of the character backgrounds.
It should be fun, because I read the book. I didn't listen to the music until afterwards. I kept noting that there were places where the music was recommended in there, and I thought, well, I'll do is when I go back through it again, I'll give a listen to it. Stuff. So it's going to be good stuff. Okay, you've talked about there's going to be a sequel very likely coming after this. You said you've already got in mind what you're going to do. Have you guys already started on the sequel, or you're focusing on getting the first one ready for everybody?
So the sequel, like I said, I do have notes on the sequel. I will say this is the first time we've said this to anybody. The very first scene of the sequel and a couple of panels past that, I've actually let Steph know where those first things are going. Mm-hmm. And one of the fun things about that is that Steph knows a little bit about certain aspects that are going to be resolved in the sequel, but none of the big things that anybody is really going to want to be resolved. So even though she knows a little bit about where it's going to start, she really doesn't have much more information than anybody else. And that makes it really fun because she's going to be asking the same questions as everybody else. But the sequel definitely has been started. We try to keep ourselves on a pretty stringent cycle, meaning like, right now, we just started launched the Kickstarter for Heirs. We're deep into working on the Accursed for Alterna. We're going to be working on the script for Tales from Nocturnia number 2, which is the medieval spinoff. Once we get through that, then we're going to be actually putting the actual real heavy push on getting the sequel developed and started in that respect. I do have music for the sequel release actually written as well too. It's not going to be a full album this time. It's going to be a shorter release, but there's been a few songs that have been written for a little bit that are going to be involved in the sequel as well. So we're going to keep the music going. It may not be in the same form as this one where it's like, hey, if you want to go hear more about this character origin story, go listen to this song. It may be a little more general in scope, but is definitely going to be going in with the sequel. And I will say this, the sequel, actually people will find out the name of the sequel at the very end of issue 11, the very end of the issue trade of the trade. We actually name what the sequel is going to be called on that last page.
Okay, good. Well, something to look forward to. Now, I have to say to Steph, I can relate to where you are because I also help out with an indie comic and I'm the editor of that. And the writer does not tell me anything. He gives me stuff to read, and I give initial feedback based on what I read. And it's fun to do. You know, he's working on a story right now, and I kept saying, oh, you can't do this because that would be too heartbreaking. You got to do this, that, and the other. So I'm forever, like, advising, you know. And, of course, whether or not he takes that or not is up to him. But I'll give him my impressions of what it is so I can relate. It's fun to do that, actually. I actually enjoy. There's certain things
I did too
in the book. And it's called Stabity Bunny, just so people know.
Yes.
I do that, and I just got a huge kick because there are certain things I know we're going to happen, and I keep watching people's reactions, just like Richard is, Richard Rivera. And I'm always interested to see people's reaction as certain things become revealed that are going on. I know some. I don't know it all. There's certain things that I know are going to happen. So I can relate to where you are with that because it's good to have somebody who can give you honest feedback.
Yeah, it's really good. It's great. I actually really enjoy it and almost prefer it in a way. Because I can look at it the way that a reader is going to be looking at it. They're not going to know either. And I feel like that kind of gets me out of it a little bit more. Matt and I also co-write, like we said, you know, Tales from Nocturnia was co-written, and our alternate title, The Accursed, is co-written as well. And so, of course, we know all the facets of those stories because we created them together. So it's nice to kind of go back to Heirs and be the editor on that and be, you know, a fan as well. But yeah, enjoying the process the way that it should be enjoyed, I think is kind of a part of the editing process that I enjoy the most.
Cool stuff, because that's the good way to do it is to, you want to know how people are going to react, because writing and stuff is a very solitary existence.
Yeah.
You write stuff. How do you know how people are going to react? And it's nice to have somebody that can give you an initial reaction that you
yes.
know that you can give this stuff. So that works out real nicely. I can relate to that.
Absolutely. I love it.
Now, we talked about conventions and the fact that you dress up in steampunk there, Matt. So moving forward, what conventions are you going to be at? And then we want to talk the ones that both of you will be at.
Well, I know that by the time this thing airs, we'll have been at, well, I won't have been, but the time this thing airs, Steph will be at, tell her where you're going to be at, Steph, tomorrow.
I'm going to be at San Diego Comic-Con tomorrow. I'm only there for one day, but I will be part of the Alternate Comics panel, which is about breaking into indie comics.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let me go pull up our page really quick, because we said at the beginning of this year that we wanted to do probably 12 shows this year. And we say shows, I mean, show, it could be a show. It could be an appearance at a comic book store. We said we wanted to have like 12 for the year. Mm-hmm. The last count we had, we were already at 17. And I think that as of today, we now have 14 more that are already confirmed for the rest of the year. It's been a little wild, but let's see. The next full show we have is Sunrise Comic-Con on August 10th. We then also have a steampunk show called Steampunk Bash on August 11th in Largo, Florida. We have Acme Comic Creator Con, which is one that you guys were at the last time. This is the mm-hmm. the successor to that. That's going to be right there at Acme Superstore in Longwood. Is going to be on August 17th. Mm-hmm. Steph and I should be at all those together. Southwest mm-hmm. Florida Steam Con in September. Ancient City Con. Those are all the ones that are coming up in the near future. And then again, we have two more that look like I may have two more one day shows that are going to pop up in August during the campaign as well that we're going to announce in the next day or so.
What about like New York Comic Con?
We don't have any of the larger shows for the second half of the year.
Okay.
What happened was last year we went to every show we could, whether it was Steph by herself or me by myself or us together. And we hit WonderCon, and so this is going to be the second San Diego Comic Con. We went to LA Comic Con together. We went to Emerald City MegaCon. Mm. We decided that for the second half of this year, we wanted to be at some of the smaller shows mm-hmm. because from a pure business perspective, we've had more success going to the smaller shows and the smaller cities where it's not us competing with A-list actors to get people's attention. Mm-hmm. So we decided that we were going to have the rest of the shows for 2019. Unless something major came up, like Steph being able to be on the panel at San Diego Comic Con, we were going to try to focus just on the ones in Florida for the rest of the year and then get back to, like I said, we have 14 of them in Florida for the rest of the year, which is kind of crazy. And then get back on to deciding which ones we want to do out of 2020. And hint, hint, hopefully you and Richard can hook us up, man, because we'd love to do shows with you guys. Love to do shows with you guys.
Okay, well, that's good, because I'm jealous because I want to get to WonderCon. That's one I haven't gotten to. Emerald City is fantastic. It's just a wonderful
convention. I enjoyed WonderCon. I feel like WonderCon was probably, comparing the bigger conventions that we've been to, both collectively and individually, WonderCon was the most organized and cleanest. It sounds weird, but it just had a very different feel to it than a lot of the other conventions I've been to. But we love DCCC, Emerald City. They mm-hmm. probably have the most impressive artist alley that we've seen at any convention we've been to so far.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Any other things that we should know about the projects that you guys are working on? Or does that cover it?
I think that pretty much covers it right now. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, we are really happy about the fact that, you know, Airs is where it is. Like I said, having a trade version is pretty amazing to be able to say, holy crap, you know, there's going to be a book with all our stuff in there. But having Airs issues, the trade version, the album, we've got a bunch of little cool things. Like Steph said, it's glow-in-the-dark jacket patches. We do trading cards for our series, Tales from Nocturnia. And then the reason she was on the Alterna Comics panel was the fact that we do have the title The Accursed that's coming out on Alterna. Mm-hmm. And it's a title that we're really excited about. We're really excited about the relationship with Peter and with the Alterna Comics writers and crew. And it's just going to be a fun time. It's going to be something totally different than we experienced with Airs and with Tales from Nocturnia. So it's going to be awesome to be able to experience that side of life as well.
Okay. And the very important date is Sunday, August the 18th at 9 p.m. We want to make sure that you're over the $3,700 goal by that time and then some, so that we get more good stuff. So as far as social media, how do we keep up with your stuff?
Okay. So we've got social media for our titles, and we also have social media for our umbrella company that we work under, which is In Symmetry Creations. So I'll start with that because that's kind of the easiest. That's, you know, where you can find out about everything that we're doing. So that's our website for that is insymmetrycreations.com. INSYMMETRY creations.com. We're on Facebook as In Sim, and we're also on Twitter as In Sim Creations for Heirs of Isildur. We have our website, which is heirsofisildur.com, which of course you can get any of the merchandise there if you are looking into that. But of course, we're going to say, you know, visit our Kickstarter first before you go there. And then we are Heirs of Isildur on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And for our spinoff series, Tales from Nocturnia, we also have a Facebook for that as well, which is Tales from Nocturnia on Facebook. And on Twitter, it's TF Nocturnia. So I know it's a lot of information, but again, go to our InSymmetry creation stuff, and that'll kind of guide you where you need to go.
Cool. And I wish you guys much success because you're doing a great job in doing that and telling a story that I haven't read before, which after my years of reading comics, I love to have something new. So I hope you guys keep it up. You're doing wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it a lot, Wayne. I really appreciate the fact that you were able to get so in-depth into the characters as well. That's Heirs is a character-driven story. We always say we want to create characters that people can relate to and universes people want to escape into. And for somebody to take the time to really be able to delve into the characters like that means a lot to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great. So I can't wait for more.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.